Welcome to Stories from the Shadows. I'm Mordell. And here is part two of The Secret Chamber by Mrs. Oliphant.
The words were not ended when Earl Robert replied suddenly with impatience in his voice, "Fiends are the fancy of men, like angels and other follies. I am your father. You know me. And you are mine, Lindores. I have power beyond what you can understand. But I want flesh and blood to reign and to enjoy. Come, Lindores." He put out his other hand. The action, the look were those of kindness, almost of longing. And the face was familiar. The voice was that of the race. Supernatural. Was it supernatural that this man should live here shut up for ages? And why? And how? Was there any explanation of it? The young man's brain began to reel. He could not tell which was real, the life he had left half an hour ago or this. He tried to look round him, but could not. His eyes were caught by those other kindred eyes, which seemed to dilate and deepen as he looked at them, and drew him with a strange compulsion. He felt himself yielding, swaying towards the strange being who thus invited him. What might happen if he yielded? And he could not turn away. He could not tear himself from the fascination of those eyes. With a sudden strange impulse, which was half despair and half a bewildering half-conscious desire to try one potency against another, he thrust forward the cross of the old sword between him and those appealing hands. "In the name of God," he said. Lindores never could tell whether it was that he himself grew faint, and that the dimness of swooning came into his eyes after this violence and strain of emotion, or if it was his spell that worked. But there was an instantaneous change. Everything swam around him for the moment. A giddiness and blindness seized him, and he saw nothing but the vague outlines of the room, empty as when he entered it. But gradually his consciousness came back, and he found himself standing on the same spot as before, clutching the old sword, and gradually, as though a dream, recognized the same figure emerging out of the mist, which, was it solely in his own eyes, had enveloped everything, but it was no longer in the same attitude. The hands which had been stretched out to him were busy now with some of the strange instruments on the table, moving about, now in the action of writing, now as if managing the keys of a telegraph. Lindores felt that his brain was all a twist and set wrong, but he was still a human being of his century. His thought of the telegraph, with a keen thrill of curiosity, in the midst of his reviving sensations, what communication was this which was going on before his eyes? The magician worked on. He had his face turned toward his victim, but his hands moved with unceasing activity. And Lindores, as he grew accustomed to the position, began to weary, to feel like a neglected suitor waiting for an audience, to be wound up to such a strain of feeling, then left to wait, was intolerable. Impatience seized upon him. What circumstances can exist, however horrible, in which a human being will not feel impatience? He made a great many efforts to speak before he could succeed. It seemed to him that his body felt more fear than he did, that his muscles were contracted, his throat parched, his tongue refusing its office, although his mind was unaffected and undismayed. At last he found an utterance in spite of all resistance of his flesh and blood. "Who are you?" he said hoarsely. "You that live here and oppress this house." The vision raised its eyes full upon him, and again with that strange shadow of a smile, mocking yet not unkind. "Do you remember me?" he said, "on your journey here? That was a delusion, the young man gasped for breath.
More like that you are a delusion. You have lasted but 1 in 20 years, and I. For centuries.
How for centuries and why? Answer me, are you man or demon? Cried Lindors, tearing the words as he felt out of his own throat. Are you living or dead?
The magician looked at him with the same intense gaze as before.
Be on my side, and you shall know everything, Lindors. I want one of my own race. Others I could have in plenty, but I want you, a Randolph.
Dead? Do I seem dead? You shall have everything, more than dreams can give, if you will be on my side.
Can he give what he has not? Was the thought that ran through the mind of Lindors, but he could not speak it. Something that choked and stifled him was in his throat.
Can I give what I have not? I have everything. Power, the only thing worth having. And you shall have more than power, for you are young, my son.
Lindors. To argue was natural and gave the young man strength.
In this life, he said, here, what is all your power worth here? To sit for ages and make a race unhappy?
A momentary convulsion came across the still face.
You scorn me, he cried with an appearance of emotion, because you do not understand how I move the world. Power, 'tis more than fancy can grasp, and you shall have it, said the wizard with what looked like a show of enthusiasm.
He seemed to come nearer, to grow larger. He put forth his hand again, this time so close that it seemed impossible to escape. And a crowd of wishes seemed to rush upon the mind of Lindors. What harm to try if this might be true? To try what it meant, perhaps nothing, delusions, vain show, and then there could be no harm, or perhaps there was knowledge to be had, which was power.
Try, try, try,
the air buzzed about him. The room seemed full of voices urging him. His bodily frame rose into a tremendous whirl of excitement. His veins seemed to swell to bursting. His lips seemed to force a yes in spite of him, quivering as they came apart. The hiss of the S seemed in his ears. He changed it into the name, which was a spell, too, and cried,
"Help me, God!"
Not knowing why. Then there came another pause. He felt as if he had been dropped from something that had held him and had fallen and was faint. The excitement had been more than he could bear. Once more, everything swam around him, and he did not know where he was. Had he escaped altogether? Was the first waking wonder of consciousness in his mind. But when he could think and see again, he was still in the same spot, surrounded by the old curtains and the carved panels, but alone. He felt, too, that he was able to move. But the strangest dual consciousness was in him throughout all the rest of his trial. His body felt to him as a frightened horse feels to a traveler at night. A thing separate from him, more frightened than he was, starting aside at every step, seeing more than its master. His limbs shook with fear and weakness, almost refusing to obey the action of his will, trembling under him with jerks aside when he compelled himself to move. The hair stood upright on his head. Every finger trembled as with palsy. His lips, his eyelids quivered with nervous agitation. But his mind was strong, stimulated to a desperate calm. He dragged himself round the room. He crossed the very spot where the magician had been. All was vacant, silent, clear. Had he vanquished the enemy? This thought came into his mind with an involuntary triumph. The old strain of feeling came back. Such efforts might be produced perhaps only by imagination, by excitement, by delusion. Lindors looked up, By a sudden attraction, he could not tell what. The blood suddenly froze in his veins that had been so boiling and fermenting. Someone was looking at him from the old mirror on the wall. A face, not human and lifelike. Like that of the inhabitant of this place, but ghostly and terrible, like one of the dead. And while he looked, a crowd of other faces came behind, all looking at him, some mournfully, some with a menace in their terrible eyes. The mirror did not change, but within its small dim space seemed to contain an innumerable company, crowded above and below, all with one gaze at him. His lips dropped apart with a gasp of horror. More and more and more. He was standing close by the table when this crowd came. Then all at once there was laid upon him a cold hand. He turned, close to his side, brushing him with his robe, holding him fast by the arm. Sat Earl Robert in his great chair. A shriek came from the young man's lips. He seemed to hear it echoing away into unfathomable distance. The cold touch penetrated to his very soul. "Do you try spells upon me, Lindors? That is a tool of the past. You shall have something better to work with. And are you so sure of whom you call upon, if there is such a one? Why should he help you, who never called on him before?" Lindors could not tell if these words were spoken. It was a communication rapid as thoughts in the mind. And he felt as if something answered that was not at all himself. He seemed to stand passive and hear the argument. Does God reckon with man in trouble, whether he has ever called to him before? "I call now." Now he felt it was himself that said, "Go, evil spirit, go, dead and cursed, go in the name of God." He felt himself flung violently against the wall. A faint laugh, stifled in the throat, and followed by a groan, rolled round the room. The old curtains seemed to open here and there and flutter, as if with comings and goings. Lindors leaned with his back against the wall, and all his senses restored to him. He felt blood trickle down his neck. And in this contact once more with the physical, his body, in its madness of fright, grew manageable. For the first time, he felt wholly master of himself. Though the magician was standing in his place, a great, majestic, appalling figure, he did not shrink. "Liar!" he cried in a voice that rang and echoed as in natural air, clinging to miserable life like a worm, like a reptile, promising all things, having nothing but this den, unvisited by the light of day. "Is this your power, your superiority to men who die? Is it for this that you oppress a race and make a house unhappy? I vow in God's name, your reign is over. You and your secret shall last no more." There was no reply, but Lindors felt his terrible ancestor's eyes getting once more that mesmeric mastery over him, which had already almost overcome his powers. He must withdraw his own or perish. He had a human horror of turning his back upon that watchful adversary. To face him seemed the only safety, but to face him was to be conquered. Slowly, with a pang indescribable, he tore himself from that gaze. It seemed to drag his eyes out of their sockets, his heart out of his bosom. Resolutely, with the daring of desperation, he turned round to the spot where he entered, the spot where no door was, hearing already in anticipation the step after him, feeling the grip that would crush and smother his exhausted life, but too desperate to care. How wonderful is the blue dawning of the new day, before the sun, not rosy-fingered, like that of Aurora of the Greeks, who comes later with all her wealth, but still dreamy, wonderful, stealing out of the unseen, abashed by the solemnity of the new birth, when anxious watchers see that first brightness come stealing upon the waiting skies, what mingled relief and renewal of misery is in it, another long day to toil through, yet another sad night over. Lord Gowrie sat among the dust and cobwebs, his lamp flaring idly into the blue morning. He had heard his son's human voice, though nothing more, and he expected to have him brought out by invisible hands, as had happened to himself, and left lying in long deathly swoon outside that mystic door. This was how it had happened to heir after heir, as told from father to son, one after another, as the secret came down. One or two bearers of the name Lindors had never recovered. Most of them had been saddened and subdued for life. He remembered sadly the freshness of existence which had never come back to himself, the hopes that had never blossomed again, the assurance with which nevermore had he been able to go about the world. And now his son would be as himself, the glory gone out of his living, his ambitions, his aspirations wrecked. He had not been endowed as his boy was. He had been a plain, honest man and nothing more. But experience and life had given him wisdom enough to smile by times at the coquetries of mind in which Lindors indulged. Were they all over now, those freaks of young intelligence, those enthusiasms of the soul? The curse of the house had come upon him, the magnetism of that strange presence, ever living, ever watchful, present in all the family history. His heart was sore for his son, and yet, along with this, there was a certain consolation in him, having henceforward a partner in the secret, someone to whom he could talk of it, as he had not been able to talk since his own father died. Almost all the mental struggles which Gowrie had known had been connected with this mystery, and he had been obliged to hide them in his bosom, to conceal him even when they rent him in two. Now he had a partner in his trouble. This was what he was thinking as he sat through the night. How slowly the moments passed. He was not aware of the daylight coming in. After a while, even thought got suspended in listening. Was not the time nearly over? He rose and began to pace about the encumbered space, which was but a step or two in extent. There was an old cupboard in the wall, in which there were restoratives, pungent essences and cordials, and fresh water, which he himself had brought. Everything was ready. Presently, the ghastly body of his boy, half dead, would be thrust forth into his care. But this was not how it happened. While he waited so intent that his whole frame seemed to be capable of hearing, he heard the closing of the door, boldly shut, with a sound that rose in muffled echoes through the house, and Lindors himself appeared, ghastly indeed, as a dead man, but walking upright and firmly, the lines of his face drawn and his eyes staring. Lord Gowrie uttered a cry. He was more alarmed by this unexpected return than by the helpless prostration of the swoon which he had expected. He recoiled from his son as if he too had been a spirit. "Lindors!" he cried. Was it Lindors? Or someone else in his place? The boy seemed as if he did not see him. He went straight forward to where the water stood on the dusty table, took a great draught, then turned to the door. "Lindors," said his father in miserable anxiety, "don't you know me?" Even then the young man only half looked at him, and put out a hand almost as cold as the hand that had clutched himself in the secret chamber. A faint smile came upon his face.
"Don't stay here," he whispered. "Come, come."
Lord Gowrie drew his son's arm within his own and felt the thrill through and through him of nerves strained beyond mortal strength. He could scarcely keep up with him as he stalked along the corridor to his room, stumbling as if he could not see, yet swift as an arrow. When they reached his room, he turned and closed and locked the door, then laughed as he staggered to the bed. "That will not keep him out, will it?" he said.
"Lindores," said his father, "I expected to find you unconscious. I am almost more frightened to find you like this. I need not ask if you have seen him."
"Oh, I have seen him. The old liar. Father, promise to expose him, to turn him out. Promise to clear out that accursed old nest. It is our own fault. Why have we left such a place shut out from the light of day? Isn't there something in the Bible about those who do evil hating the light?"
"Lindores, you don't often quote the Bible."
"No, I suppose not, but there is more truth in many things than we thought."
"Lie down," said the anxious father. "Take some of this wine. Try to sleep. Take it away. Give me no more of that devil's drink. Talk to me. That's better. Did you go through it all the same? Poor papa. Hold me fast. You are warm. You are honest," he cried. He put forth his hands over his father's, warming them with a contact. He put his cheek, like a child, against his father's arm. He gave a faint laugh, with the tears in his eyes.
"Warm and honest," he repeated. "Kind flesh and blood. And did you go through it all the same?"
"My boy," cried the father, feeling his heart glow and swell over the son who had been parted for him from years by that development of young manhood and ripening intellect, which so often severs and loosens the ties of home. Lord Gowrie had felt that Lindores half despised his simple mind and duller imagination, but this childlike clinging overcame him and tears stood in his eyes.
"I fainted, I suppose. I never knew how it ended. They made what they liked of me. But you, my brave boy, you came out of your own will."
Lindor shivered. "I fled," he said. "No honor in that. I had not courage to face him longer. I will tell you by and by. But I want to know about you."
What an ease it was to the father to speak. For years and years, this had been shut up in his breast. It had made him lonely in the midst of his friends.
"Thank God," he said, "that I can speak to you, Lindores. Often and often I have been tempted to tell your mother. But why should I make her miserable? She knows there is something. She knows when I see him. But she knows no more."
"When you see him?" Lindores raised himself with the return of his first ghastly look in his bed. Then he raised his clenched fist wildly and shook it in the air. "Vile devil! Coward! Deceiver!"
"Oh, hush, hush! Hush, Lindores! God help us, what troubles you may bring!"
"And God help me, whatever troubles I bring," said the young man. "I defy him, father, an accursed being like that much be less, not more powerful than we are. With God to back us, only stand by me. Stand by me."
"Hush, Lindores, you don't feel it yet."
"Never to get out of hearing of him all your life."
"He will make you pay for it, if not now, after. When you remember he is there, whatever happens, knowing everything. But I hope it will not be so bad with you as with me, my poor boy. God help you indeed if it is, for you have more imagination and more mind. I'm able to forget him sometimes, when I am occupied, when in the hunting field going across country, but you're not a hunting man."
"My poor boy," said Lord Gowrie, with a curious mixture of a regret
which was less serious than the other. Then he lowered his voice. Lindors, this is what happened to me since the moment I gave him my hand.
I did not give him my hand.
You did not give him your hand?
God bless you, my boy. You stood out, he cried, with tears again rushing to his eyes.
And they say,
but I don't know if there is any truth in it.
Lord Gowrie got up from his son's side and walked up and down with excited steps. If there should be truth in it. Many people think the whole thing is a fancy, but if there should be truth in it, Lindors.
In what, father?
They say, if he is once resisted, his power is broken, once refused. You could stand against him, you!
Forgive me, my boy, as I hope God will forgive me, to have thought so little of his best gifts, cried Lord Gowrie, coming back with wet eyes and stooping. He kissed his son's hand.
I thought you would be more shaken by being more mind than body, he said humbly. I thought if I could but have saved you from the trial.
And you are the conqueror.
Am I the conqueror? I think all my bones are broken, father, out of their sockets, said the young man in a low voice.
I think I shall go to sleep.
Yes, rest, my boy. It is the best thing for you, said the father, though with a pang of momentary disappointment. Lindors fell back upon the pillow. He was so pale that there were moments when the anxious watcher thought him not sleeping, but dead. He put his hand out feebly and grasped his father's hand.
Warm. Honest, he said with a feeble smile about his lips, and fell asleep.
The daylight was full in the room, breaking through shutters and curtains, and mocking at the lamp that still flared on the table. It seemed an emblem of the disorders, mental and material, of this strange night, and as such it affected the plain imagination of Lord Gowrie, who would have fain got up to extinguish it, and whose mind returned, again and again in spite of him, to the symptom of disturbance. By and by, when Lindor's grasp relaxed and he got his hand free, he got up from his son's bedside and put out the lamp, putting it carefully out of the way. With equal care, he put away the wine from the table and gave the room its ordinary aspect, softly opening a window to let in the fresh air of the morning. The park lay fresh in the early sunshine, still, except for the twittering of the birds, refreshed with dews and shining in that soft radiance of the morning, which is over before mortal cares are stirring. Never, perhaps, had Gowrie looked out upon the beautiful world around his house, without a thought of the weird existence which was going on so near to him, which had gone on for centuries, shut up out of sight of the sunshine. The secret chamber had been present with him since ever he saw it. He had never been able to get free of the spell of it. He had felt himself watched, surrounded, spied upon, day after day, since he was the age of Lindors. And that was 30 years ago. He turned it all over in his mind as he stood there and his son slept. It had been on his lips to tell it all to his boy, who had now come to inherit the enlightenment of his race. And it was a disappointment to him to have it all forced back again and silence imposed upon him once more. Would he care to hear it? When he woke, would he not rather, as Lord Gowrie remembered to have done himself, thrust the thought as far away as he could from him and endeavor to forget for the moment until the time came when he would not be permitted to forget? He had been like that himself, he recollected now. He had not wished to hear his own father's tale.
I remember, he said to himself. I remember, turning over everything in his mind.
If Lindors might only be willing to hear the story when he woke, then he himself had not been willing when he was Lindors, and he could understand his son and could not blame him, but it would be a disappointment. He was thinking this when he heard Lindor's voice calling him. He went back hastily to his bedside. It was strange to see him in his evening dress, with his worn face, in the fresh light of the morning, which poured in at every crevice. "Does my mother know?" said Lindors. "What will she think?" "She knows something. She knows you have some trial to go through. Most likely she will be praying for us both." "That's the way of women," said Lord Gowrie, with the tremulous tenderness which comes into a man's voice sometimes when he speaks of a good wife. "I'll go and ease her mind and tell her all is well over." "Not yet. Tell me first," said the young man, putting his hand upon his father's arm. What an ease it was! "I was not so good to my father," he thought to himself, with sudden penitence for the long past, long forgotten fault, which indeed he had never realized as a fault before. And then he told his son what had been the story of his life, how he had scarcely ever sat alone without feeling, from some corner of the room, from behind some curtain, those eyes upon him, and how in the difficulties of his life that secret inhabitant of the house had been present, sitting by him and advising him. Whenever there has been anything to do, when there has been a question between two ways, all in a moment I have seen him by me. I feel when he is coming. It does not matter where I am, here or anywhere. As soon as ever there is a question of family business, always he persuades me to the wrong way, Lindors. Sometimes I yield to him. How can I help it? He makes everything so clear. He makes wrong seem right. If I have done unjust things in my day, you have not, Father. I have. There were those Highland people. I turned out. I did not mean to do it, Lindors, but he showed me that it would be better for the family. And my poor sister, that married Tweedside and was wretched all her life. It was his doing, that marriage. He said she would be rich, and so she was. Poor thing. Poor thing, and died of it. An old McAllister's lease. Lindors, Lindors, when there's any business. It makes my heart sick. I know he will come and advise wrong and tell me something I will repent after. The thing to do is decide beforehand that, good or bad, you will not take his advice. Lord Gowrie shivered. I'm not strong like you, or clever. I cannot resist. Sometimes I repent in time and don't do it, and then. But for your mother and you children, there is many a day. I would not have given a farthing for my life. Father, said Lindor, springing from the bed, two of us together can do many things. Give me your word to clear out this cursed den of darkness this very day. Lindors, hush, hush, for the sake of heaven. I will not, for the sake of heaven. Throw it open. Let everybody who likes see it. Make an end of the secret. Pull down everything, curtains, walls. What do you say? Sprinkle holy water. Are you laughing at me? I did not speak, said Earl Gowrie, growing very pale and grasping his son's arm with both his hands. Hush, boy, do you think he does not hear? And then there was a low laugh close to them, so close that both shrank, a laugh no louder than a breath. Did you laugh, Father? No, Lindors. Lord Gowrie had his eyes fixed. He was as pale as the dead. He held his son tight for a moment. Then his gaze and his grasp relaxed, and he fell back feebly in a chair. You see, he said, whatever we do, it will be the same. We are under his power. And then there ensued the blank pause with which baffled men confront a hopeless situation. But at that moment, the first faint stirrings of the house, a window being opened, a bar undone, a movement of feet, and subdued voices became audible in the stillness of the morning. Lord Gowrie roused himself at once. "We must not be found like this," he said. "We must not show how we have spent the night. It is over, thank God. Oh, my boy, forgive me. I am thankful there are two of us to bear it. It makes the burden lighter, though I ask your pardon humbly for saying so. I would have saved you if I could, Lindors." "I don't wish to have been saved, but I will not bear it. I will end it," the young man said with an oath, out of which his emotion took all profanity. His father said, "Hush, hush," with a look of terror and pain. He left him, and yet there was a thrill of tender pride in his mind. How brave the boy was, even after he had been there. Could it be that this would all come to nothing, as every other attempt to resist had done before? "I suppose you know all about it now, Lindors," said his friend Farrington after breakfast. "Luckily for us who are going over the house. What a glorious old place it is." "I don't think that Lindors enjoys the glorious old place today," said another of the guests under his breath. "How pale he is. He doesn't look as if he had slept." "I will take you over every nook where I have ever been," said Lindors. He looked at his father with almost command in his eyes. "Come with me, all of you. We shall have no more secrets here."
"Are you mad?" said his father in his ear.
"Never mind," cried the young man. "Oh, trust me, I will do it with judgment. Is everybody ready?" There was an excitement about him that half frightened, half roused the party. They all rose eager, yet doubtful. His mother came to him and took his arm. "Lindors, you will do nothing to vex your father. Don't make him unhappy. I don't know your secrets, you two, but look, he has enough to bear."
"I want you to know our secrets, Mother. Why should we have secrets from you?"
"Why, indeed," she said with tears in her eyes. "But Lindors, my dearest boy, don't make it worse for him."
"I give you my word, I will be wary," he said, and she left him to go to his father, who followed the party with an anxious look upon his face.
"Are you coming too?" he asked.
"I know, I will not go, but trust him. Trust the boy, John.
He can do nothing. He will not be able to do anything," he said. And thus the guests set out on their round, the son in advance, excited and tremulous, the father, anxious and watchful, behind. They began in the usual way, with the old staterooms and picture gallery, and in a short time the party had half forgotten that there was anything unusual in the inspection. When, however, they were halfway down the gallery, Lindor stopped short with an air of wonder. "You've put it back, then," he said. He was standing in front of the vacant space where Earl Robert's portrait ought to have been.
"What is it?" they all cried, crowding upon him, ready for any marvel. But as there was nothing to be seen, the strangers smiled among themselves.
"Yes, to be sure, there is nothing so suggestive as a vacant place," said a lady who was of the party. "Whose portrait ought to be there, Lord Lindor's?" He looked at his father, who made a slight assenting gesture, then shook his head drearily.
"Who put it there?" Lindor said in a whisper.
"It is not there, but you and I see it," said Lord Gowrie with a sigh.
Then the strangers perceived that something had moved the father and the son, and notwithstanding their eager curiosity, obeyed the dictates of politeness and dispersed into groups looking at the other pictures. Lindors set his teeth and clenched his hands. Fury was growing upon him, not the awe that filled his father's mind.
"We will leave the rest of this to another time," he cried, turning to the others almost fiercely. "Come, I will show you something more striking now."
He made no further pretense of going systematically over the house. He turned and went straight upstairs and along the corridor.
"Are we going over the bedrooms?" someone said.
Lindors led the way straight to the old lumber room. A strange place for such a gay party. The ladies drew their dresses about them. There was not room for half of them. Those who could get in began to handle the strange things that lay about, touching them with dainty fingers, exclaiming how dusty they were. The window was half blocked up by old armor and rusty weapons, but this did not hinder the full summer daylight from penetrating in a flood of light. Lindors went in with fiery determination on his face. He went straight to the wall as if he would go through, then paused with a blank gaze. "Where's the door?" he said. "You are forgetting yourself," said Lord Gowrie, speaking over the heads of the others. "Lindors, you know very well there was never any door there. The wall is very thick. You can see by the depth of the window there is no door there." The young man felt it over with his hand. The wall was smooth and covered with the dust of ages. With a groan he turned away. At this moment, a suppressed laugh, low yet distinct, sounded close by him. "You laughed," he said fiercely to Farrington, striking his hand upon his shoulder. "I laughed? Nothing was farther from my thoughts," said his friend, who was curiously examining something that lay upon an old carved chair. "Look here, what a wonderful sword, cross-hilted. Is it an Andrea? What's the matter, Lindors?" Lindors had seized it from his hands, and he dashed it against the wall with a suppressed oath. The two or three people in the room stood aghast. "Lindors," said his father in a tone of warning. The young man dropped the useless weapon with a groan. "Then God help us," he said, "but I will find another way." "There is a very interesting room close by," said Lord Gowrie hastily. "This way. Lindors has been put out by some changes that have been made without his knowledge," he said calmly. "You must not mind him. He is disappointed. He is perhaps too much accustomed to have his own way." But Lord Gowrie knew that no one believed him. He took them to the adjoining room and told them some easy story of an apparition that was supposed to haunt it. "Have you ever seen it?" the guest said, pretending interest. "Not I, but we don't mind ghosts in this house," he answered with a smile. And then they resumed their round of the old noble mystic house. I cannot tell the reader what young Lindors has done to carry out his pledged word and redeem his family. It may not be known, perhaps, for another generation. And it will not be for me to write that concluding chapter. But when, in the ripeness of time, it can be narrated, no one will say that the mystery of Gowrie Castle has been a vulgar horror. Though there are some who are disposed to think so now. Join me next week on Stories from the Shadows for another spine-tingling tale of the unseen and the unknown. Till then, I wouldn't blame you if you leave the lights on.